this is Danielle from The Jealous Curator, and this is episode 71 of Art for Your Ear. This episode is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. You can check them out at saatchiart.com. So today is about coloring. Coloring with beautiful oil pastels on really big pieces of paper. I am talking to Terrence Payne, a Minneapolis-based artist who also happens to have an artist-run gallery. So we're going to talk about that too. Terrence and his fantastic wife, Carolyn, invited me to stay with them when I was in Minneapolis to do one of my Girl Crush workshops way back in 2012. Jennifer Davis was the artist that co-hosted that event with me. And when I asked Jen to come on the podcast, all of you probably know this, she said no, but that I should ask Terrence instead. Apparently, he has all sorts of crazy stories. So let's see if he does. Calling Minneapolis. Hi, Terrence.
Danielle, how are you doing?
I am so good. I haven't talked to you in literally years.
Yeah, it's been a little while.
I know.
It doesn't seem like that long, but...
I know, time flies. But I'm so glad that I got to do this. And it was really cool to actually kind of see you in action. When I stayed at your house when I was there to do Girl Crush with Jennifer Davis.
Yeah, totally.
It was really cool. And just seeing your studio and everything and like the scale of your work and all that stuff. So I've been watching and writing about you since then, but we've never really got to talk in detail.
Yeah, this will be fun.
Okay. So, and the other thing that you have to do for me after this is peer pressure Jen into doing this as well.
You know, I'll work on it, but man, I've been working on her for years to
What
be
is the
more
deal?
Visible.
What's the deal?
There's a lot of weird, like, Minnesota things that I just don't get. I'm not a native, but, like, there's that whole humble. I'm a Minnesota humble. Oh, shucks. I'm just like, you're awesome. You should tell everybody, but, you know. Whatever.
Yeah, we'll just do it for her. When I messaged her originally to say, hey, come and do this, she said, no way in hell. And then she said, but you should email Terrence because he's hilarious and you should have him on. So here we are.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you're not from Minnesota, Sam, this is a perfect segue into going back into your childhood. Where are you from and were you always an artsy kid?
I was always an artsy kid. I don't really have a hometown to claim as such. We moved around a lot growing up because of my dad's work. So I'll give you the rundown.
Okay.
Actually, here in Minnesota. And then we moved to South Dakota when I was a baby. And then we lived in Omaha, Nebraska for a little while. And I spent most of my childhood in a suburb of Chicago. And then we moved back to Omaha when I was in high school. Then I went to college in Iowa State University, and my parents moved to Memphis, and I lived there for a little while. And then I moved here after school, and I've been here since, 95, I think, was the year.
Wow. So
yeah.
Do you feel good staying in one spot now?
Yeah, it's been good, you know. I don't know, like... People ask me about that, moving around a lot. You know, I didn't know any different, so it didn't seem odd to me.
Right.
I was fine with it. And I had two brothers that I'm very close in age to, and, you know, we're kind of good buds.
Right.
So, it was, you know, and anytime we moved somewhere, it was like a quarter of a soccer team. We
true.
Just make friends.
True enough. And so were you always sort of making art through all of that?
Yeah, I loved to draw when I was a kid. And, I was a TV kid. I watched a lot of cartoons. And, like, if you want to talk about sitcoms from the late 70s and early 80s, like, I could tell you anything you need to know.
I could too. That could be just a full episode right there.
Yeah, seriously, such a nerd. So I was always drawing, and, you know, it wasn't a real creative household. My dad's an engineer. My mom came from a farming family, so I was kind of like a freak because I could draw things. And I went to Catholic school, too, and the nuns weren't really down with it until they realized they could, like, make me draw them pictures of Jesus and shit. So.
And did you?
Oh, hell yeah, I got out of class because they'd be like, Terry, you need to do, like, you know, some stupid manger thing. And I'm like, sure. And I'd go to the cafeteria and I'd just hang out by myself and draw, and I didn't have to deal with them.
Oh my gosh.
It was only really a problem. There was like when, I think it was like the fourth grade, I was drawing. I came up with this idea that I would do portraits of Cabbage Patch dolls for the girls in the class. Charge them like $5. And then Sister Renee found out about that, and I got disciplined.
She wasn't down with the capitalism?
No, not with the Cabbage Patch. Apparently it was fine when you were John Jesus for her, but like, you know, and the bloodier the better. They love the bloody creature.
Oh my God. Well, I hope the Cabbage Patch kids weren't bloody, were they?
No, I just drew the same one every time, put a different name under it. I mean, they all look the same.
They do. Just,
this is a great racket. And, you know, I threw in a Care Bears for an extra $2.
Oh, I was really good at drawing Care Bears. And also Garfield. I was really good at Garfield. Oh,
I couldn't get down with Garfield. I mean, he was lazy.
He was lazy, but so easy to draw. And people loved it. You could have made, like, $6, I bet. Although I would have paid you $5 to draw my – I had – Magenta was my girl, and then Lorne Stewart was my bald preemie baby Cabbage Patch.
And they were very special, I'm sure.
Yes, I adopted them. They were my own, so I would have paid you $5 each.
Awesome. I'll still do it for
okay.
you.
Okay, you'll still do it? Great.
Yeah.
My mom sold them in a garage sale when I went to university.
Oh, no.
I came home. My children had been sold in a garage sale.
Oh, my gosh.
Right?
Well, you know, that happens.
She still doesn't understand, like, the devastation of that. And if I had portraits to remember them by, just imagine.
Yeah, you could. You could put them on the milk cartons.
Yeah, I know. Get them back. I'm gonna send you pictures of what they look like. When you're not doing shows and super busy... I'll send you $10 for it.
Thanks.
No problem. So your brothers, I guess that they weren't artsy then.
No, they're total jocks. I mean, you know, we're very athletic kids and played a lot of sports and stuff like that. But, you know, I just spent a lot of time on my own just kind of drawing.
Are you the youngest?
I am the middle.
Oh, the middle.
A set of Irish triplets. I mean, we're all really close.
Oh, yeah.
A year older than me. My younger brother is like 9 months younger.
Oh, hello.
Right.
God.
Yeah.
Good job, Mom. Yeah.
Right.
I cannot even imagine that. But anyway, and so when you after you finished drawing all the bloody Jesuses for the nuns, did you kind of know that did you go to art school? Is that what you were sort of thinking the plan was?
Well, you know, that's what I always wanted to do. I mean, something either. You know, when I was a little kid, I wanted to be a cartoonist because I wanted to make Saturday morning cartoons and eat sugary cereal.
I thought
that would be the life, you know, and then as I got older, you know, I wasn't sure exactly how it was going to be, you know, and when I was in high school and it became apparent to my parents that that was something that I was really going to do. They were really pushing for me to do graphic design because, as my mom would say, you know, you can have a job with that or whatever. And I was just like, ugh, whatever. So that's how I ended up going to Iowa State. They had a really good design program. And that lasted maybe a year before I alienated all the instructors because, you know, I was into design and things like that, but I didn't quite want to do it the way they wanted to do it. I wanted, you know, obviously I was more focused on pictorial elements than typographic and things like that, and, you know, and then all that came back to me later.
I was going to say, cause your work now is very, like there's, you can totally see design in it.
Yeah. And you know, I've just been like a sponge over the years, just picking stuff up wherever I could, you know, because I wasn't getting it in at the Catholic school art class. There was like, you know, those little squares of tissue paper and you wind them up and glue them to something and make Abraham Lincoln or something. It was just torture.
And so when did you switch from graphic design to fine art then?
Yeah, totally. Without skipping a beat. I mean, that's what I wanted to do. And, you know, I was always really into, you know, at that time, You know, in school, I got more out of my art history classes than I did out of the studio arts classes, except for maybe like printmaking, where you're learning something technical.
Me too. Exactly.
And I had a really great professor who I didn't get along with, but I got so much out of his classes. And he did a really good job of sort of showing what was going on in the larger world and how that was influencing what artists at that time were doing, especially with 20th century art and things like that. And that just really struck a chord with me. I was just like that. You know, I never thought about things that way and how art fit into a larger picture of culture and humanity and things like that. And that's something that I've taken, you know, with me to today. I always think about, you know, not that what I'm doing is going to be super influential in how people live their lives, but I think it's a good thing to think about when you're sort of documenting the things around you and be conscious and aware where things are coming from, you know.
That's what I loved about art history so much, because that same thing, I was minoring in that, but then in studio, right? And I just, every time I'd go into art history, it was so cool because I thought, I loved learning what came before and then the thought of being what's going to come next.
Yeah, exactly. And you're like, how do they even know? Or maybe they didn't know and it was just like a zeitgeist thing and people just started doing it.
Yeah, well, that's why I started this podcast, because I loved art history so much, but all you can go on, you know, most of them are dead. And so all you can go on is what's in the textbooks and what the teachers tell you. And I thought, well, you guys are all still alive. So, see, because the thing about the Cabbage Patch Kids would not be in the textbook.
No.
But never. I've now documented it.
Yeah. Thank
see?
You.
You're welcome.
Put it on my headstone.
Yeah, you're welcome. That's what you're going to go down. You're going to be known for now. Great.
Cabbage Patch Pain.
That's right.
That's my blues name.
Yeah, that's right. I love it. And so when you were doing fine arts, was drawing still your thing?
Yeah, drawing was always my emphasis.
Has it always been oil pastels?
No, that came later, you know. The thing about the way I got into oil pastels, like, I love the look of painting, but I did not have the patience to wait for paint to dry. I just wanted to, like, move through and get on to the next thing. So I was the guy in the painting studio with the hairdryer and the headphones on, annoying everybody, making a lot of noise in the corner, just, like, trying to get things done. And then I was playing around with oil pastels, and I was like, oh, I can get the same, like, light and color that I could from painting without having to wait for it.
Were you using oil paint?
I was using oil and acrylics. I was playing around with those. You know, mainly I was drawing with color pencils and graphites. And, you know, I could get, like, certain sort of luminosity with the color pencil. But oil pastels just really had the richness that I was looking for.
Did you feel like you had more control?
It took a while to get the control. You know, the tendency with our oil pastels, it's so easy to smudge them and blend them and do things with your fingers. But then they just end up looking like a muddy mess. And you just kind of learn. You, like, lose that quality of the light. Mm. So it took a few years to discipline myself to just use a mark and layer them and figure out what the opacity of different brands and colors are and things like that, you know. It's real exciting technical stuff.
Well, what was the thing that made you decide to try them?
It was just, they were laying around. I don't know if I had them, and I started drawing with them. I don't know what I was working on. It was just, I think it was like some random studio class that I was taking to fill credits. And I was just like, these are kind of cool. And it was my last semester of school. You know, and then when you get out of school, you know, I didn't know what the hell I was going to do. And I still had some of these oil pastels, so I just kept drawing with them. It just kind of evolved organic that, you know.
And what did happen when you graduated? Did you just head into an art practice right away, or did you have a day job?
Well, I was doing a lot of independent studies with one of my drawing instructors, and she was really pushing me to go to graduate school, but she didn't know the student I was before she met me. And I was just like, yeah, I don't think the kid's got the GPA for that. So I had a lot of fun in school. So then I got out, and my girlfriend at the time, you know, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was working at a restaurant, and she's like, well, let's just save money for the summer and go to Europe and do the backpacking thing for a few months. So we did that. And we got back, and we were staying at her parents' house. And it was around Thanksgiving or the holidays or something like that. So her whole family was around. I was like, I need to get out of here. And her dad was kind of a gambler, and I won like $400 off a card game with him. Thanksgiving dinner, and I was like, this is enough to make it to Minneapolis and put a deposit down on an apartment.
Oh my God.
You know, and it was just, and I got here, and I was like, I knew that the art thing was what I wanted to do from what I'd seen when I was traveling. You know, I was like, I think I can do this. I didn't really have an idea of what to do, but fortunately, I landed a really good gig at this place called the Uptown Bar. It was like a hit music club back in the day where all the bands would come through, and I met a lot of really cool and creative people that I worked with that were like all young and struggling, trying to do the same thing. So, you know, we just kind of pulled ideas and started showing in coffee shops and restaurants and things like that. And eventually that turned into gallery shows and other things. So, you know, I got kind of lucky that I fell in with the right people and made the right contacts when I was starting out. But I also had sort of a willingness just to put myself out there. I mean, I'd put my art anywhere that I thought people would see it just to try and start a following and build on that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Like, well, good thing you won that card game.
Yeah, old Doyle. $400 made my day. I think he just wanted me out of the house and away from his daughter. To be honest with you, he probably threw the game, but...
Just hightailed it out of there. Thanks for the pumpkin pie. I'm out.
See you later, man.
Here's a... I didn't even think about this. Did you ever meet Prince? Speaking of Minneapolis and music places.
Oh, yeah, I did. It was really embarrassing. A buddy of mine worked at a club that Prince had a private booth that was, like, covered with this gauzy curtain kind of thing. So you never knew if he was in there or not. It was kind of a big joke. And people knew that he might be there and, like, try and look in and stuff. And we were just like, whatever. Anyway, so we'd go there and party after hours at the club because my buddy Dan had a key. And we had brought some people that we met. And then we were going to... Anyway, I fell down. I was hammered. And I fell down in front of Prince's booth. And I tried to play it off like I meant to do it. And so I started humping at the floor and said, look at me, I'm Prince. And then, of course, Prince comes out of the booth and steps over me and just looks down and calls me a bitch. And I was just like, oh, my God.
Oh.
I was like, hopefully I don't remember this tomorrow. Actually, I did.
Oh, yep. Well.
But, yeah, that was horrible.
Who knew he'd be behind the gauze that particular day?
Well, yeah, it was like 4 in the morning, too, you know, like... Whatever. He was hanging out.
Was he by himself?
No, he had somebody else. He had another person with him.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you never did that again?
No, that never happened.
Wow. Yeah. So, okay, this is just, we're just really racking this up for the old art history textbooks now.
Yeah, totally.
We're getting some really good stories.
Oh, God. The most embarrassing, when I worked at the Uptown... It was kind of a, it's like during the day it was a greasy spoon, kind of a rough joint at night. They had bands, stuff like that. And it was one morning, it was like a really busy Saturday brunch, and this guy kept getting in my way at my wait station. And eventually I told him I was going to shove a tray up his ass if he didn't get out of my way. And then he sat down and he had his hair in a bun when he was standing around in my way, and he took it down, and my boss was like, oh, he's like, wow, that's Robert Plant. It's just like, oh, shit, dude. And he's like, what? I was like, I just told him I was going to shove a tray up his butt. It's like, man, why do you do stuff like that all the time? It's like, I felt so bad, because Led Zeppelin, man, they were the shit when I was in high school and in college, and I felt so bad, but luckily, he had just quit smoking and needed to bum a cigarette, so I bummed him a cigarette. I explained to him how much he meant to me and apologized for, yelling at him because I didn't know who he was and recognize him, but he laughed it off.
Oh.
We enjoyed a smoke.
Thank goodness for cigarettes.
Right?
That's fine. Didn't Prince smoke? Oh, no, he probably didn't, did he?
No, he didn't.
Darn, you couldn't get out of it with that.
He was pretty straight, man.
Yeah.
He drank his wine. He'd have like one glass of wine, maybe.
Yeah. Ooh, well, at least you got out of that one.
Yeah.
Oh, my anyway. God. You have good... See, Jen was right.
I do.
You do. You have some good stories. Okay, well, let's keep going. Who knows what else is going to come out of you? Okay, so... Your work is very you. Like, I can always tell when it's you. So there's flowers and patterns and text and kind of weird-looking ladies. So where, why, and where does all of that come from?
Well, I got to go back. Like, when I started out, the whole idea came from I was looking at sort of classic portrait art. And the things that were always more interesting to me were the objects and the sort of scenery that were around the individuals that were in these portraits from especially like Renaissance era type artwork. And I was like, you know, you can do a portrait of a person, but nobody really is going to care what they look like once they're dead and all their friends are dead and things like that. What's really more interesting as time goes on are the things that they did and the things that they valued. And the objects that they chose to be a part of or represent who they thought they were. So when I initially started doing my work, it was like really narrative, and I was just sort of illustrating stories that people had told me because I thought the stories that people chose to tell about their lives were really interesting and were really descriptive as a way to sort of get at their character rather than do... physical portraits. So I didn't have any figures at all. It was just sort of these interiors with objects floating around and things like that. And as the work evolved, it, you know, sort of flattened out more. And I was making an effort to try and hone in on just maybe a few things that I thought were really, really did a good job of informing an audience of who this person might be. And I had done enough by that time that people started to figure out that these were stories they told me and stuff. And some people were getting a little bit upset about it.
Suddenly nobody was telling you anything anymore?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
And I'd already kind of like started moving away from that a little bit because, you know, enough people were telling me the sort of same things that I had transitioned it into building more or less what are archetypes of people in the communities that I was like looking at. And that's where the figures came into the work. Because I was like, well, then I can just use like a generic figure. And then I can let the costume that they're wearing be more of a description of what this archetype is. And I can let the movements that they're doing, and maybe there's another figure in the way that they're interacting with each other and, you know, sort of their expressions and things like that can be descriptive. And if people aren't looking for an identity in the face as far as like an actual person, then they're freed up to examine what the figure's doing, wearing, and representing. And that kind of involved what I do now. As when I do a body of work, I think of it as sort of a community that I'm examining that touches on a larger theme. And then each individual piece is a more focused sort of examination of an individual within that community and how they're either reacting to or affecting the larger thing, and then like smaller groups of work or, you know, maybe a little clique or a little group within that community as well. And I like to use sort of the patterns as a way of binding all those sort of individual archetypes and forming this like larger sort of scene.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. That's deep, right?
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's deep, and you are smart.
Yeah, so then it's, and that's been really great because it's really freed me up to just sort of be a lot more honest with the work and kind of like take all these different sort of stories and observations, you know, because I still work in bars and people still say really inappropriate and surprising things to me. And I'm just like, okay, how can I work this in? You know, I tried like just working in my studio for a couple years, but I was just like, you know, I need to be out there. I need to be around the hustle and I need to see what's kind of preoccupying people, because otherwise I'm just talking to my dogs and going crazy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that's where the stories are, right? It's just out there. Yeah. Do your text pieces come from that? Like some of the things, like some of the words in there, is that where that's from?
Sometimes, you know, and the way I come, you know, that's kind of like what I'm thinking about as far as like themes and stuff like that. So maybe I'll come at a body of work where I've got kind of, an idea about a theme, like, the show that I've got up right now, is called Drift. And I was thinking about sort of how people view their role in society and, you know, whether they're affecting it or a victim of it or, you know, interacting in some way, whether it's politically, personally, how they're using other people, trying to use their influence to make other people do things, stuff like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of going in the back of my head, and I'll be at work and somebody will say something and that'll make me think of a funny phrase. And sometimes that's how a piece of artwork will start, is just like, and that'll either work its way in with like the graffiti text or into some jewelry that maybe a figure's wearing, or just like a real graphic sort of lettering overlaid on a texture like flowers or clothing. Or fabric and things like that. Or I'll just be playing in the studio and just doodling and drawing, and you know, an object will come out of that makes me think of something that's associated with the larger theme, and then I'll work on that and explore that more.
For the sketching and stuff, so if when you're at the bar, if something like that pops into your head, do you jot it down or do you just remember it?
You know, if it doesn't, I generally don't write it down. If it comes back to me later, then it's an idea worth exploring. But if I've forgotten it, then I don't think I really needed to think about it too
much.
You know,
yeah.
I've got enough stimulus that if I tried to keep track of like every single thing, I'd probably go insane. It would just be too much.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm sure. Overload. And then, so do you have a sketchbook? Because your pieces are huge, right?
Yeah.
And so do you sketch and plan smaller and then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Primarily, I mean, the bulk of the effort, you know, the physical labor is in the preparation for the large drawing. I'll spend a week or two and I sketch on tracing paper so I can overlay things, because I'm kind of a freak about getting things exactly right.
I remember seeing that in your studio when I was visiting you guys, and because I'd seen your work online before I came, and didn't really the dimensions are written there, but you know, you don't really get it online. And then seeing them in person, they're so big.
Yeah.
And I was like, how are they? Because I'm super like anal, you know, I like things to be perfect. And I was like, how is it so giant and so perfect?
Yeah, that's how I do it. And it drives me nuts sometimes. But it's over time, it's just, that's the process that I've sort of evolved into working. And as I'm like drawing and redrawing and redrawing things, it's almost like a trance, you know, you can kind of forget about what you're trying to say and the like conceptual aspects of it, and really kind of hone in on the formal sort of concerns for the artwork. And that for me is kind of the fun part, is where I really find the most joy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember, I think Carolyn and I were going to go, your wife and I were going to go for a walk and get a coffee. And you said, I'm going to go do some coloring now.
Yeah.
I thought that was awesome. And so that part of it, like once you've got your idea done, you've got your sketch done, you've got it transferred onto the big paper, it's really coloring, right? You go in and you fill it all in.
Yeah. After I've got the the primary objects and the patterns and everything figured out. I do an ink drawing, just a line drawing, and I scan that into my computer and I vectorize those, and then I can do a little more fine tuning in Photoshop for the composition and lay out my color comp. And it usually changes, you know, and then I project it onto the big final artwork, and I do my underdrawing with color pencils, and I just sort of layer the oil pastels over there, over that.
Oh my
gosh. So with the color comp, you know, I've got a real good guide. But then, you know, once you actually start doing it, and the scale is such a big, that's a bad pun, but I can't think of another way to say it. It's such a large part of the work.
Yeah.
But, you know, that impact, because the relative size of the figure and the piece to the person standing in front of it makes a difference. You know, if it's smaller, then you feel like you have dominion over that person when you're looking at it. But if they're larger than you, then you're going to pay a little more attention and stand back a little bit. It's almost a little bit threatening,
yeah.
Which can be effective in some cases. And I don't know, if it's like a big piece with a lot of action, like I did one with this big, like, group of bears, like, wrestling each other, so it's just, like, furs and claws and teeth. I mean, it's almost sort of just, like, a big textural wall hanging, almost like a textile sort
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah, I think you were working on that when I was there.
Yeah.
It's so gorgeous.
Yeah, and then, but then, you know, you step away from it. So, you know, there's play.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to use these sort of different elements of the text and the familiar objects and the patterns and the color and the humor, I think, are all ways to sort of draw people into the artwork and get them thinking about what's going on. Because
mm-hmm.
I think it's a good idea. I don't know. I at least try to give clues or leave a little map for people to follow to try and figure things out. And, you know, it's always interesting to see what people come back to me with.
Yeah.
And what their take on it is. And sometimes people hit it spot on. Sometimes they're just like so out there, but it's always really fun.
Yeah. That's the great thing about art, right? Like, it's so cool what that, you know, might trigger in somebody will be completely different in somebody else.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is great. Okay. I have another technical question.
Mm-hmm.
Is oil pastel, like once you get going, so you've done all that work to get this big giant paper ready to roll. Can you mess it up at that stage? Like, are oil pastels forgiving or no? Like, you basically have to, if you need your plan.
You need to be pretty careful.
Yeah.
I mean, you can only go really darker. If you do want to change something, what I'll do is I'll scrape it off with a razor blade and maybe go over it a little bit darker. But you can let it dry out a little bit and then go back over it if you just want to do some linear work or just make some textural marks and things like that.
Have you ever had to throw out a big giant one halfway through or anything?
No.
Oh, that's good. That would kill me. Yeah.
I mean, that's why I do so much prep.
Because yeah.
It's not a very forgiving thing. It's not like painting where you can just go over it.
Yeah.
You know, and then once I've got it done, I use a, like an acrylic spray varnish and go over it to fix it. So then it's safe.
Right. Wow. Where do you keep them all?
In my house. Thankfully I don't have the problem of having to carry a lot of inventory. I do a pretty good job of finding them homes.
Oh, that's awesome.
But yeah, because I don't like looking at them too much.
And so your studio, is it still in your house?
Yeah, it's still that little room
yeah.
in my house.
That's awesome.
Yeah, if I have like a big commission or something like that, I'll rent a space for a couple months just to do those works. Because I did one a couple years ago for a restaurant. They wanted these like 7-foot by 7-foot drawings. And I was like, well, then I have to get a bigger space for this one. But, you know, that's money up front, so I don't really care about it.
Yeah.
I'll just like crank them out.
You need space. Yeah, I can't even imagine that.
I prefer to work at home. I like having my dogs around because, like, a lot of times if I get in a hole with a piece and I'm not sure where it's going, yeah, it's good. I just grab my dogs and go for a walk a couple miles and come back to it with fresh eyes,
yeah,
because it's nice to be able to have that freedom where I can go in the kitchen, bake a cake or something.
Yeah.
Just to get my mind off.
I know. My go-to is usually more coffee. And then I'm just shaky and I should just make cake maybe.
Yeah. Cake is always good.
Cake is always good. Okay. I'm going to, this was a good segue into two different things. So I'm going to loop back around later and because I want to talk about your show that you've got up right now because it's gorgeous. Right. But I also want to talk about something that you and I have in common, and I don't know how you do the coloring that you do, but you have arthritis.
I do.
Quite severe.
Yeah.
And so when did that kick in? And were you like, because I know like mine kind of came out of nowhere right around when I met you actually.
Yeah.
Maybe you gave it to me.
I might have. I don't know.
And I remember just being like, what's that?
Shouldn't have been eating off my plate.
I know. It was that cake. It was just so good.
It's delicious.
I just remember I was 38 when I got it. And my doctors were basically like, well, it's degenerative. Like, nothing you can do. And my hands hurt so much. And art making, because I do collage. So even now, holding scissors and stuff isn't always so easy. And so when I found out that you have, because you have rheumatoid, right?
Yeah.
How do you do what you do?
Well, I was, I think it's been 10 or 11 years now since I got diagnosed. And the year previous to that was really hard because, you know, I had to go to a bunch of doctors to figure out what's going on. But in the meantime, I was having all these flare-ups and it was affecting, you know, there are days that I was really immobile. Like I had one day that thankfully I was driving by my gallery. I had to pull over and I spent 6 hours just sitting in the gallery before I could walk and drive again.
Oh my God.
You know, it was ridiculous.
So is it your whole body or did certain things go first?
It mainly affects, you know, it's in your joints.
Yeah.
It's an autoimmune disease where your body thinks there's something going on, so it attacks your joints for whatever reason. And I learned to see some little signs. You know, I feel like I'm having a fever or something like that, so I know an attack's coming. But the one thing it has done, I mean, now it's better. I've got good medication and good doctors and things like that. So as long as I'm careful about, you know, my levels of stress and, you know, there's triggers that will bring an attack on. If I don't push myself too hard, then I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
And stay on my medication schedule that I'm supposed to stay on, which is hard to do, especially when you're getting ready for a big exhibition and things like that. But the one thing it did do in a positive way was sort of slow me down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before, any idea I had, I thought was a good idea, and I was going to put that in a frame and put it up somewhere and try and show it to as many people as I could. Whereas now, my output is not quite what it used to be because I've had to slow things down, but I'm a little bit more careful and I do a lot more self-editing than I used to do. Which I think has really helped my artwork out a lot. That and, you know, I had to quit partying like I used to do because of my health. I mean, that was one of the big triggers that I was having. I noticed was the correlation between alcohol and, you know, the hangover wasn't just a headache anymore. It was like not being able to walk for a day.
Wow.
And so, yeah, so I still do get flare-ups. Like, I was getting ready for this show and I was maybe going a little, I was doing like 16-hour days the last week of getting things ready, and that was too much, and it put me out for a day. But, you know, otherwise, as far as, like, I get into such sort of a, when I'm working on the large pieces and I'm doing all my pastel, it's such a weird thing. I'm just, like, so sort of focused and, like, zeroed in on what I'm doing. I don't really notice anything going on around me, and I don't notice the pain until I stop. And then I'm just like, oh, should I just stop like an hour ago?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you just kind of get into that almost like a meditative zone, I'm sure.
Yeah, and, you know, I used to do a lot longer periods of drying. Like, it would be nothing to go like 12 hours straight, you know,
wow,
on a piece. But now, you know, 8 hours is kind of my max. I got to take breaks more often.
Mm-hmm.
But that's good, you know, because it gives you – it forces you to sort of step back and evaluate where things are going and maybe make changes where they need to be. Mm-hmm. Whereas before, I would have just been plowing right through everything and gotten done with it and be like, oh, man.
Mm-hmm. So that's a good silver lining.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I mean, it's a drag otherwise, but.
Yeah. I know. I think mine, they said, was osteo, but I moved and I have a new doctor now, and I was telling him, and he doesn't think so. So they're going to retest because he thinks it's rheumatoid, but just because of the reactions I have and the way that I, you know, how fast it came on and how painful it is and all that stuff. But for me, if I don't eat sugar, I'm not fine, but way better. And yesterday I took Charlie after school and we went and got ice cream. Oh, my hands are so swollen. My neck hurts so much. And I was like, I don't think that Rolo scoop, I don't think it was worth it. It was good, but
at
I don't know.
Time,
that it, yeah, I don't think it was worth it.
Yeah, you know, it's just like you have to just make your lifestyle adjustments and stuff and get used to it. Like, I don't even really think about it very much anymore. The only drag is, like, I have a giant needle phobia and I have to do one of my medicines is a biologic that's in an EpiPen. Even though it's an EpiPen, I know there's a needle in there.
Yeah.
And I just hold it against my leg for a half hour going, if you do this, you can have a cookie. Like I'm a freaking dog or something.
How often do you have to do that?
Just once a week. Okay. Thank God. If I had, I don't know how people that.
I know, like with diabetes and stuff where you have to needles every day.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
I don't know how people do heroin. I'm like, aren't you afraid? I'm like, smoke it.
Think it through, people. There's other options.
Needles are creepy. It's like a spider.
Well, you know, they don't bother me, but I'm not going to say that because I don't want to have to do an EpiPen once a week anyway. Oh. If I ate your cake, I'd have to.
Yeah, you would.
So I can't have that.
Yeah.
I'll just watch you eat it.
Yeah, I make the nurses hold my hand when I get my blood work done.
Oh, that's so cute.
It's horrible.
Okay, so I think that's such an interesting story and so cool that you have, you know, that didn't stop you and you just kept on going and I love that.
Yeah, I know some other artists that have RA too and it's just like, and it's weird. It's like different for everybody. It affects everybody differently and like everybody's got their thing that they can't do anymore and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I think artists are different where it's just like, you know, it's not so much a job. It's a compulsion. So you figure out a way to make it work.
I was just going
to
say, you can't not do it. Like that's how I feel about collage. Like, you know, it's like, I still want to hold the scissors. I still want it. So, you know, if I'm at a birthday party and there's cake on a Friday night and I know that I want to spend all weekend making art, I don't have the cake.
Yeah.
Because I know I won't be able to hold the scissors properly, right? So I would rather forego the cake and be able to make art all weekend.
Yeah, and not being able to make art is
I don't like that. Yeah, it is. I get super grouchy and I would rather,
talk to Carolyn about what I'm like when I'm not.
I'm sure I already know because I'm probably, my husband calls it the art grouchies. And so he'll always say like, maybe you should go make a collage or something.
Yeah.
Because he knows that it will get rid of that attitude. Okay, well, maybe I'll interview Carolyn too and get the other side of the story.
Yeah, she's got some good stories.
I bet she does. Okay, so let's talk about your show.
Yeah.
So when did, it's already up right now.
Yeah, we installed it this weekend.
And this is at your gallery, basically.
This is at Roselix, in Minneapolis. And I'm showing with, the way we work things there is we show artists in pairs. We have two gallery spaces within the gallery. So it's John Diebel and I are showing together. He does really great cut paper and collage pieces that are really cool. You can see them at roselixgallery.com.
Okay. I'm going to put I do a post with every podcast. So I'll put stuff about the show and I'll put some of his work in there too.
Yeah. And so like whenever I show with somebody there, we always like to kind of get together and talk about like a theme that we can sort of do together. And he was thinking a lot about sort of nationalism and demagoguery and yada yada for obvious reasons.
I was just going to say, with November 8th around the corner and all.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was kind of thinking about, you know, the way people were acting, not necessarily in such political terms, but sort of a similar theme. So we came up with Drift. It's just sort of like people searching and looking for answers. And yeah, it's a really good show. I'm really happy with the work that I was able to do for this one. I kind of moved away a little bit from the figurative pieces that I've been doing a lot lately.
I love this new work. That is so, yeah. Like, I think because I, you know, was a graphic designer for so many years. I just quit, by the way.
Did you? Congrats. Yes.
Thank you. 18 years in, and I'm like, no, I'm making Jealous Curator my full-time thing.
That's awesome.
Terrifying / awesome. And so I think that's what I love about this new series is it's very, like, all the patterns and, like, those balls of things.
Yeah, I was just
so
really
cool. Funny.
Well, I was like, I did a piece in my last show where I put the pattern on a fabric that covered a figure, and I was doing, like, covering the figures with different textures and things like that. And I was just like, well, what are some different ways that I can do this and make this work? And I'm like, let's lose the figure. I'm like, I always like doing animals. I can start working the patterns more into the markings and colorings. Like, there's the piece with the toads where it just really, you just kind of lose the toads with the spots that are on their bodies and stuff. And then there is one that's just like a ball of snakes.
That one's really cool.
Yeah, and it just almost looks like sort of a tartan kilt sort of thing. So it's just like losing sort of the primary objects to the pattern.
Although I have to say, the way you feel about needles is how I feel about snakes.
Yeah, see, snakes are okay.
No, they're not.
Handlers, you got to watch out for it.
I don't want anything to do with any of it.
There was a lady when we were kids that would give us a couple bucks to go down to the creek when I lived in Chicago and fill our wagon up with garter snakes, and then she would make soup out of them.
No! Oh my God, I just got like full heebie-jeebie creep out.
We didn't understand it at the time, but thinking about it, I was like, that is gross. I'm sure it's fine. Whatever.
Oh my God, I'm going to throw up.
Yeah, so I was this show is a lot more playing around and seeing what would come out of doing some different things. So I'd done pieces in the past using the round frame composition before, but never really explored it on purpose.
And I love
it. It's just like, you know, I'm into maybe see if I can't get half a dozen like that and see how that affects the compositions and things. And it really turned out, when you walk through the space, when you're in the exhibition, I have all the disc pieces on one wall and then all the larger rectangular pieces on the other walls. And it makes a really nice balance and rhythm when you're walking through the show and the space. Yeah, and so I hope people really hope people like it.
When is it up till?
It is up through the end of the month through the 30th, and our public reception is Saturday, October 15th.
Okay.
From 7 to 11 p.m. So if you're in the Twin Cities, check it out.
Oh, that's so cool. Oh, I wish I could see it in person.
Yeah, I'll send you some pictures.
Okay. I have to get myself back there. I had so much fun. I had never been to Minneapolis before coming that time, and I just loved it so much.
It has changed so much since you were here.
Really?
Yeah, the neighborhood that we were... Do you remember that German restaurant we went to? That's like blown up like crazy. There's all kinds of cool restaurants and little galleries and stuff over there.
Oh.
I mean, Minneapolis is such a great... I'm just going to talk about the art scene here for a little bit. It's such a great place for artists because the state, it's well-funded. When I started Roselux, this is how this thing happened. When I moved here, it was a pretty much commercial scene. A lot of commercial galleries downtown, which was kind of restrictive from an artist's point of view, because once I finally got into that and got into a gallery, you know, there was like sort of one thing that became successful. They wanted you to repeat that and do that over and over again. You know?
Right, yeah.
And then that neighborhood took off and the rents all went up and the galleries all closed. And then there's just sort of this void, you know, and it was just like, what are we going to do to fill the vacuum? And I was like, I don't really want to wait around for somebody else to do something. So I started a gallery called Bros Lux, which is a collective. And I was like, thought being that a group of artists can do a really good job of presenting their work in a professional way and working together on promotion and marketing. But having the freedom to do whatever they want to do and follow their muse wherever it might take them. And, you know, at the same time, all these nonprofit spaces started popping up all around town. So the emphasis just totally swerved from commercial to artist driven art scene, which is really great. There's a great studio scene in Northeast. And,
And that was, you guys opened it quite a while ago, right? Like 12 years, 11 years?
It'll be 15 years in February, yeah.
Wow, that is like, can you hear that clapping?
Yeah.
That's amazing and fantastic. And it's such a no-brainer, actually. Like, you know, of course that the artists are going to, you know,
and our audience really responds well to it because they know who we are and what we do. And, you know, when you're making art, I think the one thing that people always really see in artwork, whether or not they know it or not, is the sort of the pleasure or the joy that the artist has in making the art and doing it for yourself. That just comes out. It becomes so much more apparent. So we've been doing it for 15 years. I think we've had, Jen and I, that's how I met Jen Davis, actually. Mm-hmm. So I brought her into the gallery and helped her out when she was getting started. We sat down and tried to count all the artists, and I think we got to 120.
Wow.
Something that we've been able to help out. And sometimes it works out great for artists just to use as a market base for what they do in the Twin Cities area, and so they can focus their intentions on other things. And other times we bring in a younger artist and teach them, you know, professional practices and how to like get their studio arts go up and going, and then they go off and do other things.
So. Wow, that's so cool. So if is it all for artists in that area?
Yeah, we only do local artists. We do one exhibition every December called The Open Door, which is curated. We invite somebody to jury the show. And this year it's being juried by Andrea Carlson, who is an artist formerly in Minnesota, now in Chicago, who's really great and does curating as well. And it's a good way for us to see what's going on with artists in the Twin Cities, but it's an international call. So we get to see all kinds of really cool art, and it's a really fun show because it's a lot of young artists brought together in the gallery, and it brings in a whole different kind of audience for us and attention. So, yeah.
Well, I'll put all of that up on the site and then people can.
Yeah, totally. It's a great opportunity. We get a lot of our artists actually through that show, seeing them there and start talking to them, building relationships that way.
So cool. I love that you do that. It's just such a, it's great for you guys. And then it's so helpful, especially like when you're coming out of school and you kind of don't know what's next. Like, imagine if you'd had something like that when you came out.
Yeah, it would have been awesome.
Would have been amazing.
Any kind of information as far as like making a living as an artist would have been
helpful.
Yes, seriously. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Go school, if you prefer it.
I know. Right before I graduated, I asked, like, so what do we do? Like, this is about 4 months before graduation. I'm like, so what do we do when we graduate? Because nobody had brought it up yet. Mm-hmm. And our prof was like, grad school?
Yeah.
And that was it. I was like, okay, are there other options? And he was like, well, I mean, you can try making art. And I was like, all right, check, please. I got to go. And I ended up going to design school. And yeah, anyway, but I've started to hear actually through the podcast, a lot of people have been talking about schools are now actually putting in courses like that. Not all of them, but some schools are starting to put courses in to actually prepare you for the world and how to market yourself and, you know, how to price your work and all these things that are so vital that if you don't know, how the hell are you supposed to know?
I know that the Minneapolis College of Art and Design and the University of Minnesota both offer classes like that. That I've gone and talked to students and stuff, and I think it's great.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the artists that, the young artists that I'm meeting now are so much more savvy, and it's such a different world, you know, than when I learned graphic design using, you know, Reprettier graph pens, like hand rendering type and stuff like that. And now, everything I learned then was obsolete by the time I graduated.
Yeah.
Because of computers and things, and it's such a, it's so much easier to be part of a larger community if you're willing to put the effort into putting yourself out there online.
And yeah,
making
I know.
Connections and things like that, you know, and blogs like yours are such a great way for artists to get exposure that they would never have gotten 10, but even 5 years ago, you know,
yeah.
it was a different scene, and it gives an artist so much more freedom because they're less dependent on a third party.
Yeah.
Financial.
I know. And, you know, I've heard so a lot of young artists now are actually selling on Instagram. Like, they don't even have a website. They just have Instagram.
Yeah.
And they'll just post the price and, like, they sell it right there and then and there. It's like, that is brilliant.
Yeah. I use Instagram a lot now as getting attention for shows and getting people to come through the door and getting sneak peaks and things like that.
Well, it's so cool because you can talk to the world, right? You're not just talking to your city or whatever. You can kind of hit everybody in one shot. It's very cool.
It's the best.
Oh, well, I think we should just end off with you saying that my blog is great and it gives exposure to people. I thought that was an excellent way to end.
Yeah, you know, it is. It does.
Okay, so that was super fun, right?
Yeah.
So tell Jen that she doesn't even have to talk about being embarrassed in front of Prince or Cabbage Patch Kids or trays being shoved up people's butts or anything. You've already covered all of that.
She could.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, thank you so much. This was so hilarious and fun. And I'm so excited that I get to write another post about you and post all that new work because I just crazy, crazy love it. And
awesome.
Thank you for all your hilarious stories.
Okay. Thank you again for doing this. And I will send you a couple links for those things that I mentioned.
Oh, perfect. I'll put them
in the gallery.
Yeah. I'll pop them in the post and say hi to Carolyn for me. And I will talk to you guys soon.
Do you know when this is going to be posted so I can put the word out?
Yeah. This Saturday.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
I told the kids at work last night when I was bartending and they were all laughing. You're going to swear, tell dirty stories. I'm like, you're damn right.
The odd bleep here and there is all good.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I put it up late Friday, my time, Pacific time. So it'll be up like Saturday morning and then I promote everything on Saturday on social.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Thanks again.
Thank you. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Have a good day.
You Bye-bye. Too. Bye. Well, Jennifer Davis did not lie. Those were some fantastic stories. Prince, snake soup, drawing for nuns, and yep, a nice handful of beeps. The kids at the bar will not be disappointed. But you know what? I forgot to do the not-so-speedy speed round. There were just so many good stories in there, maybe I thought he'd already done it. Oh well, next time. Huge thanks to Terrence Cabbage Patch Payne for doing this with me. Thanks to Saatchi Art for supporting this episode. Thanks to Audible.com for making my new book, which is almost out, into an audiobook. And if you want a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial, you can visit audibletrial.com/jealouscurator. And again, thank you so much for showing up yet again and listening. There will be more art for your ear next weekend. See you then.